And welcome back to the Extended News at Noon. I'm Tyler Friel with you on WISR 680 AM. And we are happy to have inside the studio today Howie Penteny of Penteny Capital Management. You hear the Penteny Capital Management Stock Market Report every morning at 7 o'clock. And, of course, Howie is our reliable financial expert here. And we love having conversations with him. And he joins us now. Howie, good afternoon. Thanks for being on the program.
Hey, that's what I am, Extended News.
You are.
Cool.
you're extended. Anytime we have conversations, they're right. Long and they're extended. That's
yes,
why you're here. That's why you're
That's
here.
Right.
But boy, and you know, since I've had a chance to talk to you really over the past year, but especially in these last 6 months or so, it has been fascinating to watch not only the stock market, but just the financial world and how we sit here in September, now October of 2020, roller coaster of just an onslaught of news, things changing by the day. But as we sit here and we look at the stock market, and that's where I'm going to start, it's kind of like nothing else is going on right now. And you had mentioned this.
I think it's been interesting for me because the markets were really hurt in March. The S&P was down about 30%. And then it hasn't looked back, see. It's just continued onward and upward. And the thing I think that's interesting right now is that this market doesn't care if there's an election in 35 days. Now, that could change tomorrow afternoon. You know, you never know what markets are going to do. But right now, it just doesn't care. It's trading, you know, on the way, on like profits. And, you know, markets always like profits. Markets like low interest rates,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And they can't get much lower. I mean, you almost don't have any place to go if you're an income person. I mean, I was looking this morning at the average 5-year certificate of deposit, average 5-year CD. People know them as CDs, 0.63%. So you're not even getting 1%, you know, for a 5-year CD. And bonds are the same way, Treasury bonds, same story. So it's interesting from that standpoint. It's interesting from never been a better time to buy a house.
Yeah.
I mean, you can buy a house in the 2% interest rate range.
Now, I know I have heard some pushback from people that maybe the price of the house is higher. But
oh, no question about it.
So, would you consider, and again, let's throw this out here. We're not offering individual financial advice. We're just you and I talking here collectively about the markets and finances. But when you're seeing prices go up but interest rates staying low, has that been a common occurrence? Does that happen all that often?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, it does.
Okay.
If you think about it. If the cost of financing something is low, you can afford to spend more money. So I remember the first house I bought, I paid 8%. Mortgage rate was 8%, okay, which was big bucks.
Yeah.
And just think, now I can almost buy a house 3 times as expensive for the same amount of money that I spent on my first house. So that market has been good, which, by the way, is one of the reasons that lumber is up 50% this year, cost of lumber. So normally that's what happens. If you go, it's no free ride. You know, you usually get on one side of thing and you think, well, I can have low prices and low cost to finance it. No. housing prices are going to go up. And they've gone up, but they're still very reasonable in comparison to when inflation was high. You know, mm-hmm. when inflation was high, prices really went up 8-10% a year, you know, a long time ago. But now it's just not like that.
Not to dig in too much into the housing market, but, you know, when the housing market crashed 12 years ago, granted, you know, I don't really remember. I remember being a part of that environment, but I wasn't old enough to look at the financial news about it.
Right.
What would you say is a better time to buy a house? Were you looking in 2009, 2010, after the housing market crashed, or where we are right now?
I was talking with a friend of mine yesterday, and we were laughing about 2007, I think. That was really the top of the housing market. You could sell a property in, let's just talk generally.
Okay.
Generally, you could sell a property in Florida back then, a condo, for instance, for about anything you wanted to sell it for. I mean, you just named your price, and it was the top of the market. Bingo. Well, give me a year and a half later, we have the banking crisis. The markets crashed. At one point in early 2009, the markets were down 55% from October of 2007. 55% is a big number, okay? And what happened was that then they couldn't give away condos in Florida. I know someone who purchased a condo for $65,000 that originally had been priced to sell about $275,000.
Wow.
He paid $65,000. Nobody wanted him. Mm-hmm. You know, it was unbelievable. So people who could afford to buy them back then and were willing to say, well, you know, the world's not – one of my favorite sayings is, you know, the world doesn't end often. So if you had the courage to go out there and buy property then, why, you've made out like a bandit, mm-hmm. you know, during this time. So the problem was that when things are tough, everybody's scared. And fear does horrible things to people. You should never make major decisions when you're under stress. I mean, if you think back in your life and you think about, well, you know, I shouldn't have done that because, you think about making those decisions, and if you were under stress, you never make a good decision because it's probably the opposite of what you should be doing. So it, you know, like right now, for instance, this market is interesting to me because it's not trading at this juncture with any emotion or whatever. It doesn't care who's elected. It doesn't care about anything. Now, I think, and I don't know anything, as you and I have discussed many times, but I would assume that as we get closer to the election, that the markets would become more volatile, both up and down, as the markets consider who's going to win. Right now, nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I looked, the bettors were about even. So usually if you go to Vegas and you see who's betting on who,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're usually pretty smart. Now, in, you know, 4 years ago, they were horrible because they were betting on Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the bettors on Hillary lost. Right now the bettors are about even.
Okay.
Biden may have a small lead. I didn't look after last night, but, you know, he may have a small lead. But, you know, the markets aren't trading as though there's going to be any big deal.
And so do you think that plays into it, is that when you look at the betting market, and I guess you kind of alluded to it, but if you're seeing a share of almost 50-50 on tickets for people believing who the next president
right,
will be,
right.
is that then going to translate to a stable market because people are, A, either unsure or maybe so sure? I don't know. How would that play?
Well, it's playing that way now.
Okay.
Like, one could assume that nobody knows now.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody does know, by the way. I think that, you know, the closer we get, you got to see some people are getting squirrely, you would think, either on the upside or the downside. The perception is that if Trump wins, good economy, good stock market, good things happen. The perception is if Biden wins, higher taxes, bad market, and we don't like rich people. So I don't know how that plays out, and I don't know if any of that's true, but that's the perception of what's going on. Now, I think markets, people don't understand this a lot of times, don't pay much attention after the fact. In other words, historically, since I've been around, hasn't made any difference who's been in power. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make any difference whether there's a Republican in power. Obama had to be, historically, one of the biggest anti-business president ever. I mean, he and the market went straight up when he was in. So you'd never know what the markets are going to do. You just don't control them normally. Normally, markets do what they do. It depends on profitability, it depends on interest rates, it depends on all kinds of stuff.
And I think we even saw that. I mean, here we are in the midst of a global pandemic, a once in a 100-year, you know,
right.
type situation. And there was fluctuation at the outset of this. I mean, I remember during that middle of March where you saw markets right after opening, what they had to halt trading on the markets a few times. But since that time, I mean, the rally has been, what have we talked, 40%?
Yeah, almost 50.
Almost 50 now?
So the markets do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't deal with well, in my history, is uncertainty. Markets will do things that you and I will say will be crazy because we don't understand. They're smarter than we are. See, the market is smarter than I am. I can go ahead and buy the stocks that I think are going to do well in the next 5 years, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that I take a look, you know, what looks like it's going to do well in the next 5 years. So I could go buy them, and in a year, they could be all down. Because markets don't deal well with uncertainty. They want to know what's going on. They want to know exactly what's going on so they can make prudent decisions. And I think it's a lot of fun to watch it because nobody does know what's going on. I love it when I see these talking heads on TV and you know, the market's going to do this and the market's going to do that. I've been doing this for decades, okay? Nobody knows, okay, what's going to happen. And I think the only thing you can do, I get questioned about this all the time, you know, well, what do you do then? How do you invest if you don't know? And what we try to do is determine what the level of risk is. You know, how do you do that? One of my questions that I love to ask people, and they hate it. They hate this question. If you give me this money, how much money can you lose before you take it away from me? People hate that. They don't want to talk about losing money. They want to talk about making money. But if you think about it, I think it makes all kinds of sense. It gives you a sense of how much risk they're willing to take. Well, you know, I wouldn't want to lose half of what I have. So that means a 50% loss.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, as a financial manager, which is what I do, I manage investment portfolios, I have to figure out some way that I can try to estimate how I can't lose more than 50%. So that means, what does that mean? That means that you can't have all your money in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you put all your money in the market and the market goes down 50%, guess what?
You've lost 50% of
your money. You're probably going to lose 50%, so you can't do that. So what we have to try to determine is what's an acceptable level of risk and how much of your money should be in the market with your comfort. It's all about comfort. Over the past 120 years or so, if you bought the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it's been impossible to lose any money if you didn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you sold... then you could lose money. You sold up here and, you know, went down there.
Yeah.
But what you have to do is you have to be comfortable. People, money is very emotional. I can tell you this. People watch money go out the door and they don't like it very much. You know, it attacks their psyche. It attacks their confidence. I mean, I think that there probably are a lot of people out there right now who are somewhat depressed because of the pandemic. They haven't been able to go anywhere. I mean, I don't like it at all. I haven't been on a vacation a year and a half. I haven't been outside of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like that very much. People get very depressed if it doesn't make sense. They don't know what's going on. See, and I get that. As someone who has their money, I understand all that. See? So people don't like it when things don't look okay. And they get nervous, and then they get stressful, and then they make silly decisions. So you don't want to see that. But the way to do it is to try to figure out, and there's, by the way, there's no easy answer to this, and there's no guaranteed way that we as investment managers can structure your account with no risk, except if it's in cash.
Okay.
You know, it's impossible to try to get it right. You probably can use asset allocation, own so much of one thing, so much of another, to help cushion your loss. But there's no way as a manager can guarantee you that you're not going to lose money.
And isn't there an inherent, and you talk about risk. I mean, to me, when you're taking your money to a financial advisor, inherently you're gambling to a certain extent, going, hey, I'm putting this money with you, knowing full well I'm not entirely sure exactly what I'm going to get out of it.
We would prefer not to call it gambling, if you don't mind.
What would be a better
word? We're not rolling dice. what you're doing is you are taking a measured risk.
Okay.
Okay. You know what the risk is. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to gamble money, you can take $1,000, excuse me, to Vegas, but only play with $250.
Yeah.
I mean, that you could call that if you wanted to. And that's essentially what asset allocation does. For instance, that's why normally, normally people don't buy all oil stocks or all healthcare stocks or all consumer durable stocks. People spread it out. Maybe you have 10 or 15 different sectors that you invest in. And even that doesn't protect you. I mean, nobody says that all those sectors won't go down in value. But even when the markets are bad, and I've seen them bad, mm-hmm. Even when the markets are bad, there are some stocks that are up. This has been very strange, this market, because, you know, I were talking about this. This is a market of stocks, not a stock market. The Standard & Poor's 500, I haven't looked the last couple of days, so don't count me as being right on the money. But this, the S&P 500, which is 500 stocks, mm-hmm. had about 300 that were down so far this year, even though the stock market generally is up. That's strange. You know, yeah. It's been a market of stocks. If you have owned some of the tech stocks and the hot stocks, you probably have done really well. If you haven't, you probably have lost some money on the other side. And nobody's ever smart, by the way, nobody's ever smart enough, including me, to figure out which side you should be on. You know, I tell people, you know, if I knew that, I'm too busy to talk to you because I'm running my own money, you know, if I knew exactly where things were. But it is true, but it's not difficult to do. It's not difficult to be an investor. I had a real estate investor one time come to me and gave me a stack of money, and he said he'd never been in the market. And he didn't think that it was smart just being a real estate guy. He owned apartments and that kind of thing. So he gave me some money. After a month, he came back and wanted his money back. Now, why? He couldn't stand it. He could see the stocks go up and down because he could see them every minute. I mean, you can look at the stock market, mm-hmm. see where a stock is every minute. His buildings didn't go up and down in value every day. Mm-hmm. He had no clue what they were worth, okay? So he was comfortable in taking that risk. And there can be a lot of risk in the real estate business, as you know. He was comfortable in that risk because he couldn't see it. He couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. But in the stock market, all he had to do was turn on the TV or look in the newspaper, and he could see how much money he'd made or lost. He was not a good candidate for the market. As far as I know, he was never back in the stock market. Hmm. It takes a special person to be an investor. You got to have courage. You got to be comfortable with ups and downs. And in my opinion, you have to have someone who can help you. It's very difficult to do it by yourself. Mm-hmm. I've known only a handful of people in my career who've been able to do it by themselves. And finding someone that you trust, someone who's competent, in my view, is difficult. People have been in and out of the business. They've been in for a long time. They haven't been in for very long, you know. And so you need to find somebody who has that experience, who can kind of help you along and be truthful with you and honest and try to tell you, look, there are no guarantees. We have this business has no guarantees. However, long-term investors, generally speaking, have done pretty well. So if you can be a long-term investor, you can be patient, okay, and you have a goal, you know, what's your goal, mm-hmm. then you probably can be okay. Otherwise, it's difficult.
And we are talking with Howie Penteny, Penteny Capital Management. Want to shift a little bit, and you and I were talking off-air before the show Just some of the markets, and you had mentioned commodities, and a few that are really standing out to you here, as we said, in October 2020.
It's commodities are kind of cool, you know. Nobody really, you and I don't think about them, see. We don't think about coffee. Coffee is a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
Boys and girls, they sell the beans. And when there's a lot of beans to sell, prices are low. And when there's not so many beans to sell, prices are high. It's really simple. It's called, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Supply and demand.
Never heard it before.
Exactly. So lumber, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Lumber is up for this year somewhere around 50%. Now, why is that? Well, because they're building houses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Interest rates are low. There's a big demand for lumber. So lumber prices are up. Lumber prices can get smashed. I mean, I remember when lumber prices got smashed because nobody was building. Interest rates were high. They weren't selling any lumber.
Mm-hmm.
And the law of supply and demand says when you're not selling stuff, the prices are low. So you should buy something. Gold and silver have been going up. And people talk about this all the time. Nobody knows exactly why or when they go. A lot of people think that you can buy them as hedges against loss. In other words, if the stock market's bad, I should own silver and gold because they'll be either stable or go up. And I think that probably is true occasionally. But the market's been pretty level in here, and silver is up 31% this year.
Hmm.
Okay? And gold is up less, 23, I think, this year. So the markets are basically neutral, a little bit above neutral. But those two commodities, here we go, are up. And people buy them sometimes in anticipation. They think things are going to get really bad. So let's buy some gold and silver and protect ourselves. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. Generally, it's not always true that you can protect yourself. But other commodities that are kind of interesting, and I like to watch things I eat, as you can tell by looking at me. Oats are up 3% this year, not doing very much. Soybeans, which is in everything,
mm-hmm.
is up 5%. Rice is up a little bit. Copper, which really is something people pay attention to in the commodities market, copper's up about 5.5%. So the commodities, things that you buy and sell and not necessarily eat, can be interesting. The dollar is a commodity. The dollar has been, believe it or not, there's been a lot of talk about the dollar being weak. Hey, it's about even or up a little.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the Mexican peso and so on, some of those currencies are down.
Okay.
But the dollar's actually been okay. It's had some volatility, but it's up and down. But you have something like we should go buy some candy. Cocoa is even for the year, give or take.
Hmm.
So it really hasn't gone up in cost to you and I. Hogs. Hogs are down. So if you want to go buy some pork, the prices should be reasonable.
Really?
Corn and sugar are up 5%, something like that. Now, we're talking about for the year.
Yeah.
You know, not in comparison with like a year ago.
Because, I mean, we are still talking to, you know, a whole quarter, right, where things, basically a quarter, January, February, middle of March, where things were still looking promising for a lot of these markets.
Yeah. And cattle's down 8%. So theoretically, if you go to the market today, the beef cost should be down from where they were in January. Now, it depends
mm-hmm.
on what you're buying. But generally speaking, that's it. The Russians are struggling. The ruble, which a lot of people laughingly say isn't worth anything, is down about 17% this year. So the Russians are having a problem because if they try to buy stuff, it costs them more rubles to buy it than it did at the beginning of the year, for instance. Crude oil's been just awful. I think that Brent, West Texas International crude, they're probably down 30%.
Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of the stocks are down more than 50. A lot of the stocks have gone down more than 50. And I think you're going to see more companies go out of business in the energy area.
Hmm.
Because if let's, I don't know what the number is now, but it used to be somewhere around $50 or $60. $50 or $60 is a break-even situation for buying and selling crude. For instance, if you can pump crude out at $30 and sell it at $60, you can make a buck. Mm-hmm. But if it's costing you $50 to pump it out and you sell it at $50 or $50, you can't make much money. So those are all things that have affected the stock market this year, because those things are all directly correlated to some stocks. So some healthcare stocks have done okay this year. You would imagine that.
Yeah.
You know, you would imagine that. And weird things have done well this year. It's been fun for me to watch. Things like recreational vehicle sales, whether it's pull behind trailers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those little puppies sell for $20,000 or so, and many of them, and more or less. I was by a dealership the other day. He basically doesn't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
So he sold everything. Why? Because people are saying, hey, I'll buy one of these things. I can travel around, just be near my family, and it'll be cool. You know, if I want to travel around the United States, I can go around the United States, but I only have to subject myself to my family. So people are buying those sorts of travel trailers.
And almost along the same lines about the housing market, I mean, if you are interested in an RV, but not necessarily at this point, could you be looking down the line at 5 years where demand is extraordinarily low for RVs, but supply is extraordinarily
high? That's what I've said.
Yeah.
You've struck on it. Okay. What else is high? How about four-wheelers?
Mm.
You know? Four-wheelers are selling everywhere. People are buying them because, again, that's something they can stay at home with,
mm-hmm.
okay? And they can participate with their family, whether they're going camping or, you know, whatever it is, whether they're going hunt, whether they're hunters. They can do that with four-wheelers. So you would have to think that if you could be patient for 5 years, that one of these days you'll be able to buy these things for a song. I can assure you that the people who are buying these $20,000 travel trailers, and I don't think that's the right way. The dealers would not like me calling them travel trailers. Pull behind.
You're in the finance business. Well, it's fine.
Yeah, I don't know any better. I don't know any better. But you would have to think, and you were right, mm-hmm. you would have to think these people are going to get tired of these things. They're not going to use them. They're going to find out that packing them up for the weekend or whatever is a lot of work, and they're getting tired of doing it. So you would have to think if you waited 5 years, it would be a buyer's market. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may catch on. That's something, for instance, that could be a permanent result of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
People could find that traveling together across the United States, whatever, is fun, that they're having fun with their families, and that doing things with the kids and the wives and everything, that's all cool. But my thought is they'll probably get a little bored after a few years, and then it would be your time and my time to maybe go buy one of those when somebody wants to sell them. But that's the cool thing about free markets. Those are called free markets. When the markets are free like that, and they trade on supply and demand, you just don't know. You can buy something today and think, well, no, it's got to increase in value, and then be really wrong. So you have to kind of make decisions based on the best information you have available for you today. And if you don't, if you're wrong, you have to be able to afford to be wrong.
I want to get into the airline industry because that was one of the dominant stories in today's news. Number of major airlines furloughing, laying off. Number of people, number of employees. What, and I don't know if you could give insight into long-term, you know, future for airlines, but maybe what you could touch upon is what's this doing to the market today, and how big of a player the airline market is in the stock market and in the economy for that matter.
Here's the most important thing you can take away from today's program, okay? And I hope your viewers take this away also. This too shall pass. It's not always going to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there have been a lot of times that things have happened to us, and you had to wait till they passed. Now, my issue, I tell people I talk to, the investment community, I don't have a clue when that is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a year from now? Is that 2 years from now? What is it? The airlines are in trouble. I read the other day where one of them was losing about $20 million a day.
That's a wild number.
Well, you can't do that forever.
No.
Okay? They're already, you know, they've already taken planes down. They've already shut some down. The traffic is building back up again. The wait lines at Pittsburgh International Airport, at the security area, there were no lines 3 or 4 months ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And now I think they're up 25-30%. People are flying again. Airlines have decided to leave the open seat in the middle open for people.
Yes.
And then you can go. I have a brand new grandson, and he lives down south, and I haven't been able to go see him yet. I just don't want to – why do I want to go through the Pittsburgh International Airport, and then I want to go through the Atlanta Airport, and then I want to go through another airport where he lives? So I would go through 3 airports, okay? In those 3 airports, you would assume that there's got to be some COVID people there. But I have taken the advice, which I think was pretty smart, of this doctor who was an infectious disease guy, and he said, and this is the reality, if you wear a mask, if you wash your hands, and if you stay out of huge crowds of people, the likelihood is you're going to be fine. And his suggestion was, do those 3 things. And don't stop living your life. And I think that's what's happened to a lot of people today. A lot of people today are very depressed because they've stopped living their lives. They don't feel like doing anything. They don't want to do anything. And that's really bad. You can't do that.
And I would imagine airlines are, and, you know, you talked about when it will get back to normal. And as you said, right, eventually it will. There's got to be an idea of consumer confidence here. Here you are, you know, somebody that's heavily involved in the market. But you're not confident yet to go fly. And so I think until consumer confidence rises, I would have to imagine places like airlines are just simply going to struggle.
It's going to be a difficult task. And I think it'll probably come all at once. One of these days, everybody will decide they need to go to Disney World, and they'll go, you know, and the planes will suddenly be full. I'm not sure. It could take, you know, a little bit at a time. But people, I watch confidence all the time. That's part of my business. And confidence, you know, it comes and goes. And it usually comes and goes in waves, okay? When the taxi driver is confident and he's recommending stocks that you should buy, you probably ought not to listen to him. His confidence is probably not warranted, okay? And
my confidence shooting a 3-point shot in a pickup game may be high, but it may not be a good idea.
It may not be a good idea. So I'm not afraid of anything. I'm cool with everything. I just don't want to be silly. And I need to travel a little bit. And I want to travel. I have a plan. I have a getaway plan for February 21 to go to Australia. Boys and girls, I don't think I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
At this juncture right now, Australia has closed borders. I don't think we're going. It's, you know, even though it's October, November, December, you know, away, my thought is I'm probably not going. And I had a trip planned to Asia last March. Good timing, huh, Howie? Yeah, and that was canceled. So as the ports begin to open, as the cruise ships are allowed to dock, that's important. They have to be able to let people off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the confidence will return. But it's very difficult to take risks just for the heck of it.
But are you surprised then where confidence, you know, is in specific industries? You know, we're talking about the airline industry, with that confidence being fluctuating, if not down, in people's ability to travel or do anything of that sort, that the market has held relatively stable. There's this lack of confidence in doing some activities, yet you don't really see that reflected at all in the stock market.
Well, you do see it in the prices of the airline stocks.
Yeah, and their stocks in particular. Yeah, 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 yeah.
They're in particular, they're not doing well. And you know, you can see the ebb and tide. I mean, you can watch things go back and forth, and I like to do it. I look almost daily. You know, what's up today? What's down? What's Europe doing? What's Asia doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Europe's bracing for another onslaught. You know, it's just the people in Italy. I know some travel people in Italy. They were basically starving to death in March and April. There was nobody traveling to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
The pandemic was incredible then. And they didn't have any – I mean, think about being in a business and having that business stop. It didn't go down 20% or 30%. It stopped. So those people who are over there, I would get an email occasionally from a lady that I have used when I've been in Italy for travel purposes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they were just starving to death.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little bit better now. Italy's doing a lot better than some of the countries over there. But, you know, it's not the fear that does it. It's the perception of what's going on. If people are afraid, they're not going to take action. They're not going to buy. They're not going to do anything. And so until that confidence comes back, and again, I'm pretty sure that this thing will pass. This thing will get over with one of these days. I just don't have any idea when. And you just have to be smart. I'm really not afraid to go anywhere. If somebody told me you have to fly to Houston this afternoon, I'd go. I just don't think I should go if it's not an emergency. If there's some real reason that I need to go, then I don't think you take chances. But I think, again, and I tell my investors this, wear your mask, stay out of big crowds of people, and wash your hands. The likelihood is you're probably going to be fine. Most doctors will tell you that.
And that's been the message from public health officials as well. And again, we're here talking with Howie Penteney, Penteney Capital Management. There are a few more things I wanted to touch on, Howie, before we let you go. You had mentioned what type of, and of course, demographics. I'm always interested in demographics. We're looking at numbers. We're looking at who's doing this and what's doing what. A little bit of a different look. Not a different look, but maybe a surprising figure that you stumbled on in terms of demographics involved in investing.
Yeah, it's... I can tell you that 15 years ago, if I would have a meeting with a husband and wife, I was talking to the husband.
Mm-hmm.
The husband made the decisions. And you can, if you're somebody like me, you can read who makes the decisions. Okay. And back 15 years ago, men were making all the decisions when it came to investments. I'm being general, but that, you know, the majority of decisions. Now, you know, I kind of laugh a little bit when I see empowering women seminars and all that. Boys and girls, women either have or control 70% of the wealth in the United States. They either have it or control it. Now, some of them may be underpaid or something. I won't argue that point. But women are in a position right now to take over the world. I mean, if they have 70% of the wealth or control it, they either control it or have 70% of the wealth, is it going to get bigger or smaller as time goes along? You have old guys like me that are going to go away.
And we don't want you to go away,
I understand,
Howie, but inevitably.
But the issue is it's going to happen. And for no other reason, the women are going to end up with that money. The other reason is that there are now more women graduating from college and more women having big-time, big degrees after college that the women are taking over all by themselves. They don't need much help, okay? I've always said a long time ago, men need to come to that consideration. And the consideration is we better hope that they keep us around to carry the heavy boxes because they're not going to need men realistically except for that. And I tell the ladies who choose to do business with me, keep us around because we can lift heavy stuff, okay? But I think that women are smarter. I think that they're more aggressive these days. And you know, from an investment standpoint, you know, I don't treat them a lot different than I do men. I mean, I understand the issues with women, families, single women, divorced, you know, a lot of things. I mean, I understand all those issues. But I have a tendency not to treat women any differently than men. They're certainly smarter than men, so you got to grasp that right off the bat.
So you got to up your game.
Exactly. You got to stay up there or you're going to lose out. And a lot of men don't like that. But, of course, I always laugh and say these women don't know what they're getting into. Because if they take over, then they got all the responsibility. See? So that would be okay with me. Go ahead and take my responsibility. I'll take the money, but go ahead and take my responsibility. See? So I think women are doing just fine. Thank you very much. They need some help in some places. I'll grant them that.
I need all the help I can get.
Yeah, but in the investment community, I would say that half the people I do business with are either women or they make the decisions, at least half. Mm-hmm. In my couples that I do business with, at least half the women make the decisions, and in maybe 25% of the cases, the women have all the money. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got all the money, so they make the decisions. So women are doing just fine, I think, and I think they're going to take over the world. So men, you better get ready.
Howie Penteny, Penteny Capital Management, thanks again for your time. What can people – and I just want to circle back on this because you had mentioned to it, and obviously politics at the forefront of what everyone is thinking. What do you think people can expect from the market over the next 35 days? And I know that's a tough prediction game, but historically, I want to go back to that. In the waning days of an election, what historically has the market done? Because there are going to be people out there who are going to be watching that aspect of it, and what have we seen – again, in the past when it comes to these elections.
And we have to do some disclosures here before we go.
Yes.
Don't pay much attention to us, everybody. We're not making specific recommendations. We're talking general
things. Absolutely.
Here. You know, we laugh a lot, but nobody knows what's going to happen. So This is a very general conversation. You should approach people that you trust, attorneys, tax advisors, whoever. You know, they'll advise you as far as investments. You're not supposed to get anything from us. Unfortunately, we don't have much content, so they're ahead today. But anyway, as I said, the only thing that I can think is that the closer we get to the election, it would not surprise me. How about that?
Okay.
It would not surprise me if you saw volatility pick up. If we don't have a clear and classic idea of who's going to be elected, and I think you have to remember something. Nobody says the same things couldn't happen this time that happened last time. You know, Hillary was a shoe-in. Trump didn't stand a chance.
Yeah,
according to the polls and everything, Hillary was a shoe-in. And so far, even though the betting's about even, I think that people still think that Biden is a shoe-in. Well, if the same thing happens now, it could, and that silent majority could come out and vote. I don't have a clue what's going to happen. I would be cautious. I don't think you need to be taking a bunch of risk, but I also don't think you need to sell everything. I mean, you do whatever you see. I don't know these people. You know, I don't know your listeners, so I can't advise them, well, you should sell everything, well, you should buy it. I can't tell you to do that. You have to do what you're comfortable with. And I would never advise you to do something you weren't comfortable with. If you think you need to sell because the election's coming up and you think that the market's going to do badly, then you have to do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But my view is that things will probably be okay. We'll work our way through this election. We'll work our way through the pandemic. And things will get back to as close normal as they can get, whatever normal is these days. But I would just tell everybody, do whatever makes you comfortable. Be patient. We'll get back to normal one of these days.
He's Howie Penteny, Penteny Capital Management. You can hear the Penteny Capital Management Stock Market Report every morning, 7 a.m., right here on WISR. Howie, again, thank you so much for your time, your insight. Always enjoy the conversation.
Thank you. Take care.
Hey, we'll be back again tomorrow. Extended news at noon. I'll be in for day 5:30 tomorrow morning. You can wake up with us. You are listening to WISR, 680 a.m.